Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
He knew he was seen, but 28 and a half hours later, his help didn't come.
Troopers face criticism over their search for a missing man in Northwest Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, for the first time in 3 years, the Elders and Youth Conference kicks off in person.
It feels really nice to stand in a room full of Indigenous people who are celebrating our identity.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Alaska State Troopers are searching for a man charged with shooting at and setting fire to a Funny River home in a dispute its occupants say might have started over firewood. 62-year-old Soldotna resident Ronald Bayering is wanted on charges of attempted murder, arson, and criminal mischief. Troopers say both residents of the home were able to escape unharmed, though according to a Facebook post, they're looking for pets missing since the incident. Bayering was still at large as of Monday afternoon, and police are looking for information about his whereabouts. According to a charging document, a woman called 911 Saturday just before midnight and said Bayering was shooting at her and her fiancé, who also lived at the residence. Shortly after, her fiancé called 911 to report the house was on fire. Troopers found the residence in a wooded lot nearby after they escaped from the burning home. One said she was hit by debris as bullets hit the house. The charges say troopers found a fuel can near the house. The residents told troopers they had known Bayering for 20 or so years and that they thought he was upset because of a dispute over firewood. Troopers also say Bayering was supposed to be on house arrest, but that his ankle monitor had been disabled earlier that day. Troopers say Bayering is 5'9" and 140 pounds with blonde hair and blue eyes. They say he should not be approached as he might be armed and dangerous. As of this afternoon, they were still looking for Bayering both by air and ground. In Northwest Alaska, troopers are facing criticism in a search for a missing man. 39-year-old Bo Adams of Nome was reported missing last Tuesday morning, but seen later that day by Alaska State troopers flying overhead. More than 24 hours afterward, Adams was located dead, and his family is questioning why help didn't arrive in time to save him.
He knew he was seen. But 28 and a half hours later, his help didn't come.
That's Brenda Adams, one of Bo's 4 siblings. She says Bo was traveling home from Koyuk to Nome last Monday. When he didn't reach Nome by Tuesday morning, Brenda says she called the Nome Police Department and Alaska State Troopers. Brenda's cousin from Koyuk had located Bo's boat but couldn't find him. Then troopers sent a plane from Nome and saw a man walking about 2 miles from Bo's boat between Golovin and Nome. Troopers say the man did not appear to be in distress, but the plane could not pick him up because, quote, terrain conditions did not permit landing, end quote. Brenda says that was her brother, he was alive, and he waved at the plane.
28 and a half hours later, from when Bo was waving and had hope, 28 and a half hours later, he was finally brought back to Nome, but dead.
She says she didn't know troopers were waiting for her cousin, who now had the coordinates of Bo's location, to continue searching on his own. According to troopers, eventually the U.S. Coast Guard was contacted and responded from Kotzebue, although they did not say when the Coast Guard flew out to the area where Bo Adams was last seen. The Coast Guard found Adams deceased in the same area where troopers had seen him less than 30 hours prior. Authorities say he likely succumbed to the elements. The Anchorage Daily News reported that troopers are conducting a review of their search and rescue efforts in the case. Adam's sister described him as a subsistence hunter, a father, and a humble soul who would help anyone in need. He survived by a teenage son. Campaign contributions are flooding in for Democrat Mary Peltola to keep the U.S. House seat she won in a special election this summer. A new campaign finance report shows Peltola raised more than $2 million in September. That brings her total contributions to nearly $4 million. Her two Republican rivals raised far less. Former Governor Sarah Palin brought in about $230,000 in September. Nick Begich III took in $57,000 last month. Like Palin, he has raised about $1.5 million in all, but about half of Begich's total came from a personal loan he made to his campaign. Peltola is also getting a cross-party show of support from the late Congressman Don Young's inner circle. A group of 18, most of them former Young staffers, lobbyists, or both, announced they're holding a fundraiser for Peltola. The fundraiser invitation says they're celebrating her commitment to carrying on Young's legacy. The annual Elders and Youth Conference was back in person today after 2 virtual years because of the pandemic. First Alaskans Institute puts on the event that celebrates Alaska Native language and culture. And as Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports, the first day's attendees say it's good to be back.
23-year-old Kungana Gabe Canfield is one of 2 youth guides at the Elders and Youth Conference. She says the excitement at the Dena'ina Center is palpable.
Yesterday we had our warming of the hands at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and it was just blown away. We had to order more food right in the middle of the event because it was just so full. We had to open up the theater and put more tables up.
More than 800 people attended the first day of the conference, which brings together Alaska Native youth and elders from across the state. The 3-day event includes workshops on voting, Alaska Native education, and preventing missing persons. Attendees can also practice Alaska Native languages, learn how to cut and pickle fish, and help build a canoe. Monday morning's events included a speech from 19-year-old Christiana Edwards. She's Tlingit from Juneau and attends Gallaudet University for the deaf and hard of hearing. In her speech, she said the pandemic highlighted the importance of community.
You can't paddle a canoe very far by yourself. You might make it into the water, but to turn and steer to make sure you're going to the right direction, you need a group of people for that. A group of people who are dedicated to the same goal and same destination.
Working together also applies to the natural world, she said. Record low salmon runs throughout the state and the September storm in western Alaska left many Alaska Native families without subsistence salmon. At the end of her speech, she received a standing ovation.
We can fight through difficulties the way our grandparents did for us. We can't paddle these canoes alone. Will you paddle with me? Will you be my relative? I'll promise to be yours. Gonna cheese. Thank you.
That message rang true for Mommuck Linda Jewell. She's visiting Anchorage from Kotzebue for the conference. She says past generations valued connecting with each other and treating everyone like family. She's glad to see young people like Edwards asking for that again.
We used to be like that with our elders. They helped and reached out to people and found a way to be a relative in one way or another. And over time, that is kind of dipped, got lost, but it's coming back strongly.
She says being at the conference in person for the first time in 2 years makes that connection more possible. In an effort to protect elders, the First Alaskans Institute required proof of vaccination from attendees. Mommuck looks down at the tan wristband she got at the check-in table.
It's so nice to be out and about and to wear these and know we're okay.
For Calvin Harry, the return to an in-person conference means business is booming. He's one of several vendors at the conference, and he sells beaded earrings, ponchos, and other clothing.
I bring a lot of Pacific Northwest designs, like ravens, hummingbirds, eagles, killer whales, bears, wolves.
He's been coming up from Vancouver Island every year for nearly 2 decades, packing whatever merchandise he can fit into a suitcase. He says this year, people are especially excited to buy from vendors outside their communities.
They see something, they don't hesitate. They say, I'll take this. You know, thank you.
Conference organizer Gloria Wolf says the gathering feels especially important as communities continue to recover from the pandemic.
It feels incredibly soothing and exciting to just hug everybody and be present in the space and to uplift one another and to see who made it to the other side and who didn't, who is here now and who can't be here. And it feels really nice to stand in a room full of Indigenous people who are celebrating our identity.
That celebration continues at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage through Wednesday afternoon. The First Alaskans Institute is also live streaming the event on YouTube, Facebook, and their website. The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention starts Thursday. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Wrangell's cross country team wins the state championship.
That feeling, like seeing them all finish, like right after each other, all in the top 10 was incredible. It was pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet. It's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
A plane crash near Cordova yesterday left its pilot dead, according to the U.S. Coast Guard. The Coast Guard's Nate Littlejohn says an emergency locator transmitter for the small plane came in about 2:30 p.m. Sunday. A Coast Guard helicopter and search plane were sent from Kodiak to the crash site in the Henny Range, about 5 miles west of Cordova. The aircraft arrived about 3 hours later.
They discovered wreckage on steep, cliff-like terrain at an elevation of about 1,700 feet. Crews were not able to lower anyone to the site due to difficult terrain and poor flying conditions with low ceilings, low visibility, rain, and mist. The Coast Guard helicopter hovered and searched in the area, but did not find any sign of life.
FAA records show the Piper Cherokee is operated by Nunak Air Taxi, which does business as Friendship Air. A call to the company was not immediately returned today. The National Transportation Safety Board's Clint Johnson says the plane's pilot was its sole occupant. Contact with the plane was lost just before the crash. An NTSB investigator was accompanying Alaska State Troopers and Coast Guard personnel to reach the crash site today. The Federal Board of Geographic Names has renamed two mountains near Anchorage after a two-year push by the founder of an anti-suicide group. As the Alaska Beacon reports, North and South Suicide Peaks will now be officially known as North and South Uyongchek Peaks, respectively. The name means Heaven's Breath in Athabascan. William Pagaran of Palmer is the president of Carry the Cure, a nonprofit devoted to suicide and abuse prevention, and he's been pursuing the name change for 2 years. He said in his application to the board that given Alaska's high suicide rate, the previous names were derogatory, disrespectful, and culturally inappropriate. The origin of the peak's prior names is unclear. Pagaran got support for the name change from local community groups, tribes, the municipality of Anchorage, and more than 1,400 people who signed an online petition. 39 Alaska state legislators also signed a supportive letter to the Board of Geographic Names. The process took 2 years, in part because the Alaska Historical Commission, which makes recommendations on geographic names in Alaska, twice opposed the name change. So did the Mountaineering Club of Alaska, which said the name change did not meet state and federal guidelines. In the end, Thursday's vote passed quickly and unanimously. Energy utilities have been meeting since May to talk strategy as Cook Inlet's top producer of natural gas warns future contracts are not a guarantee. This week, a local sustainability group says the Kenai Peninsula Borough, too, could play a role in helping avoid an energy crisis down the road by reducing its dependency on natural gas and encouraging energy alternatives. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Brettwood Higman is a member of the borough's two-year-old Resilience and Security Advisory Commission, which meets monthly to brainstorm how to make the borough more sustainable. He says Hillcorp made clear it's not short on gas right now. The company's actively pursuing several drilling projects on the east and west sides of Cook Inlet. But he does say the company said it's urgent that users diversify where they get their energy to make sure it stays that way.
Currently where we are, we're not in a crisis, but there's one not very far in the future.
Hillcorp Natural Gas is the largest component of local energy supply. NSTAR, for example, supplies gas to most of the Cook Inlet region. It gets about 85% of its supply from Hillcorp. Lindsay Hobson is a spokesperson for NSTAR. She says representatives from the company and other utilities have met several times since May to talk through their options together.
The utility group is looking at a number of avenues to pursue, and certainly one of those that we've all identified is the need for additional storage going into the future.
That was the approach Alaska took in 2010 when it faced severe natural gas shortages then. In response, the state sent tax credits to oil and gas companies and built the Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage Facility in Kenai.
Storage has allowed NSTAR to buy greater volumes of gas in the summer months when demand is a little bit lower. And so the pricing is a little bit more favorable, but it also allows us to store the volumes that we need to be able to serve customers through the winter.
Proponents of the long-sought Alaska LNG project say that project could be another answer. Oil company Marathon also has the means to import at least a small amount of natural gas from producers overseas through its terminal in Nikiski. It's not just NSTAR that relies heavily on Cook Inlet natural gas. Homer Electric Association uses it to meet 86% of its energy needs. Its contract with Hillcorp is up in 2024. And spokesperson Carrie Ann Baker says HEA is working to diversify its energy portfolio so it's not mostly dependent on one producer. The utility's made inroads for long-term hydro and tidal energy projects and is looking into turning gas from Central Peninsula Landfill into energy for the load, too. Utilities like HEA say they're not worried about running out of natural gas supply yet, but Higman says it is crucial that stakeholders like the borough start addressing the issue today by conserving natural gas in borough facilities and encouraging private landowners to do the same, for example.
While it's really nice to just assume that someone, maybe there's, you know, the state will jump in and they'll do a really great job of leading the charge here and solving this problem, I think we've all had experiences where, you know, when we assume someone else is going to solve the problem, it doesn't work out so well. And I do think that the borough does have concrete opportunities to take a leadership role.
The borough assembly didn't consider any related legislation at its meeting Tuesday, but assembly president Brent Johnson says he plans to talk to interim borough mayor Mike Navarre and other members of the assembly to figure out a follow-up. He says the borough should see if it can work with private energy companies to help them get renewables projects off the ground.
I don't foresee the borough, starting a wind farm or something. I think that we just want to make it easy for the folks who do want to start wind farms or who do want to, you know, create energy in some efficient manner that's going to be helpful for the 58,000 people that live in our borough.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough created a tax exemption earlier this year for private companies that want to create renewable projects on borough land. But Johnson notes businesses haven't taken advantage of other more general borough tax exemptions in the past. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Calista Corporation's board met Saturday to approve the final amount for its November distributions to shareholders. As KYUK's Emily Schwing reports, fall time distributions have more than doubled since the Alaska Native Corporation started paying them out in 2014.
Calista shareholders will receive $1 per share this November from Acalista payments. They come out of an investment fund the corporation established in 2014. On average, shareholders own 100 shares, according to the corporation. Calista's shareholder numbers are on the rise, topping 35,000 this year. Russ Slayton is a Calista spokesperson.
Through a shareholder-backed resolution previously, shareholders voted to have open enrollment for Calista Descendants.
This spring, Calista announced its largest payout ever at $9.8 million. The fall season Acalista distributions increased 15% since last year to total $3.85 million. In a Facebook post this month, Calista told shareholders they might see a deposit for $0.00 in their bank accounts. The corporation was testing its direct deposit systems to make sure accounts signed up for the service were still active. Fewer than half of Calista's shareholders are signed up for direct deposit. Slayton says the corporation is urging shareholders to sign up because it's a safe way to bank.
Yeah, for me, as an employee and also a Calista shareholder, it makes it a lot easier to not have to worry about bringing it to the bank or not have to worry about waiting for it to get in the mail. It just goes straight to the account.
The Calista Corporation will make a third payment to elder shareholders 65 and older in December. Those payments are also pending board approval. In Bethel, I'm Emily Schwing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The vessel that eventually replaces the aging state ferry Tustamina is likely to be a battery-powered diesel-electric hybrid. That's as the Alaska Marine Highway System leverages federal infrastructure funding to green up its fleet. Greg Jennings is a special projects liaison with the State Transportation Department. He told the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board on Friday that the state sees electric propulsion as a big part of the ferry system's future.
There's no way batteries won't be a part of any future marine transportation environment in the state of Alaska, just because that's where the industry and the regulations are going. It's where the funding is going.
The 300-foot ocean-class ferry Tustamina is nearly 6 decades old. The plan for its replacement now includes a room for housing batteries with the potential to expand. The Tustamina's two diesel engines currently use about 150 gallons of fuel per hour at cruising speed. Jennings says adding electric power will allow captains to use just one diesel engine at times. He says that's expected to cut fuel consumption by 1%.
So if you look year, over the lifetime use of the vessel, that's a major savings to the state. 1% may not sound like a lot, but in ship design, you go to immense lengths to get 1% savings because it's like every day you operate that vessel, that's 1% you're saving fuel.
State transportation officials estimate adding batteries to the vessel would add millions to the new ferry's estimated $250 million price tag. But Jennings says the state expects to lean on federal money to help pay for it. The federal infrastructure law passed last year includes more than $1 billion in ferry funding. He says adding batteries to the design will not affect the timeline. The new vessel is still scheduled to be ready for service in 2027. Wrangell's boys cross country team won its first state title earlier this month. And of course, the island community is celebrating. The last time any Wrangell team won a state championship was before any of the runners or their assistant coach were born. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
At the cross country state championships, Wrangell sophomore Daniel Harrison won the state title in 17 minutes, 29.1 seconds, but the rest of the team wasn't far behind. 5 of the team members placed in the top 8, and out of 82 competitors in the boys' Division 3 race, all 7 of Wrangell's runners placed in the top 25. Actually, it's the first time a Wrangell team for any sport has won a state championship since 1995, when the boys' basketball team beat Haynes in the state finals. After a public celebration in the school gym, most of the team gathered around a table in the high school commons, wearing their red and gray windbreakers and holding commemorative state champs teddy bears, wearing little red hoodies. Senior team captain Devlin Campbell glanced around the table.
It just felt glorious. Felt glorious to win state.
Campbell said the team's training was what he called a big grinder. Their new assistant coach, Mason Villarma, put them through college-level workouts, and Campbell said they had to trust the new process and their new coach to pay big dividends.
Nobody else in this region is doing anything that we did, so I didn't know how big of an improvement it would actually help or improve us, but it really did. It worked, and all of us PR'd insanely.
Villarma, for his part, says he was a bit worried before the final race of the season. The weather was rainy, the course was muddy, and the runners weren't looking too stellar either.
They looked really nervous, like really nervous. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to blow it. Well, I mean, they just kind of have these blank stares. Like, I remember looking at Daniel like, uh-oh, like, this might not go good. then they got it together before the race. It was pretty cool.
Harrison, who won the individual state title, confirms he was anxious too.
I was very nervous before the race, but we just did what we did before every race. We just tried to just be calm and, I mean, show up and do what we needed to do. And
the team came through. Harrison credits the team's single-minded focus. He says the state championship has been on the team's minds all season.
It was awesome to win, like, individually, and then just, like, see all of my teammates come through, like, right after each other, just back to back, and I was like, dang, we did it. We really did it. And it was crazy because, I mean, this has been our goal the whole season, and we've just been hammering it out. So, like, that feeling, like, seeing them all finish, like, right after each other, all in the top 10 was incredible. It was pretty sweet.
Harrison says he thinks winning regionals gave runners a boost of confidence before the state championships. It was the first regional win for a Wrangell boys cross-country team since 2004. Freshman Boomchain Laux placed 7th overall in the race, the fastest Division III freshman in the state. He's looking ahead to the spring and says the state cross-country title gives a boost.
It's good to have going into a track season coming from cross-country, so hopefully we can get another banner for that.
Villarma confirms he and the boys are hoping to help revive Wrangell's track program, which has been dormant for a while and hasn't ever made it to state.
I know that we had one long time ago, and I think we're making a pretty big push to get the middle school cross-country team and the high school track team back and alive, because we haven't had a baseball team or a softball team for a lot of years, so we want to be able to provide a spring sport that there's some interest in. And track's about a perfect scenario after rolling through this cross-country season. There'll be a lot of interest for it. So, of course, we don't have a track, but Petersburg doesn't either. So we'll be all right, I think.
But track doesn't start for a few months. In the meantime, Villarma will be ordering a banner to commemorate the school's first team state title in almost 30 years, and many of the boys will transition into winter wrestling. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Davis Hovey in Nome, Liz Ruskin and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Emily Schwing in Bethel, Angela Denning in Petersburg, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at newsofalaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.